Good morning. So this is the fourth and final Dharma talk for this four-day retreat on the four seals of Dharma, the four seals of the Buddha, the four seals of Buddhism. So every moment of this retreat, because of impermanence, no longer exists, which means you've had a wonderful retreat, a terrible retreat, all those moments of clarity and insight, all those moments of misery and boredom and suffering, gone. To reflect deeply on the impermanence of all composite phenomena is very important because it informs how we approach phenomena, not just the external world phenomena, but most importantly, the phenomena of our own experience, thoughts, feelings, perceptions, physical sensations. If we see them as permanent, both the whatever the experience is permanent, if we see the one who is perceiving it as permanent, and if we see whatever thought, feeling, perception is arising as permanent, we will get stuck. Has anybody gotten stuck during the course of this retreat? Look back. Why did you get stuck? What did you forget? Did you forget impermanence? If you had remembered impermanence, everything could have lightened up right then, couldn't it? So this first mark of impermanence must be reflected, meditated on. Because this retreat that we've been involved in and all the teachings and meditations is impermanent. It's gone. It will be just another one of those impermanent experiences of which in your life you've had thousands, hundreds of thousands. We only get these if we're willing to reflect, like on permanence, over and over. Like you were taught, as you go through your day continually, no matter what you're seeing, you know, changes in your own body, changes in your likes and dislikes, the news, people, birth, death, it's all, you have to label it. It's simply impermanent. Why is it occurring? Because all phenomena are composites of causes and condition and are subject to cause and effect. This is why this moment situation is unfolding the way it is. And it will last only as long as the causes and conditions that support it last. That's within me. When something arises in with me, they're only arising because of causes and conditions that are supporting its arousal. If I let it be, it will what? It will disappear. Because that is the nature of all composite phenomena, to be impermanent. But if I grab on it, if I hold on to it, if I embellish it, if I embroider it, if I obsess and ruminate, I'm just endlessly creating suffering for myself. Right? We have no one to blame but ourselves. And again, ourself is not to blame. What really is to blame is just ignorance. It's simply we function in a deluded state. We don't see that which is impermanent, we think it's permanent. Right? So to really contemplate impermanence, remember what we said the result is. The result is you get a feel for it. As you go through your day, as you go through your life, as you experience your mind states, you have a feel of this impermanent nature of everything, just arising and passing. So it's a kind of spacious openness. You know, it gives room for humor, irony, it's, you know, all those good qualities. We don't take ourselves so seriously, and our mind state so seriously, and especially our problems so seriously. So, and then let me skip to the third noble truth, the third seal. Yeah, this, you know, that all phenomena have no inherent existence. In Buddhism, this is the most key and profound. Because again, we impute solidity and permanence to the objects of our perception, which include ourself. In not seeing clearly, again, you know, that there's nothing solid there. There's not a real person. All that's before me is a skin bag inside of which is lots of stuff. It's all in motion. It's all, right? And in their mind, they're just bunches of thoughts, feelings, perceptions. It's all just in motion. There's nothing solid there. There's nothing permanent there. And there definitely is not a permanent self that links one moment to the next of experience. That's why we have to keep saying I, me, my over and over again. Why can't we just say it once? We constantly have to keep recreating the drama of self. Can you see it? Every morning when you wake up, you have to remember what? Who am I? You have to remember who you are. You know, sometimes you're in a very deep sleep and you're woken up and you have that brief moment of what? Not knowing who you are. And immediately we do what? Rather than resting it, going, well, this is interesting. But let me try this one out. We immediately kind of go into a little panic and immediately what? What do we do? What? Latch on by doing what? We remind ourselves who we are, what we're doing, you know, who we are, who, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, pull out our to-do list for the day, our daily planner. Oh, that gives me, now I know who I am. I'm somebody who's got a lot to do today. Oh, yeah. Then I feel good. Solid. I'm me. As long as I got my schedule and my plans, know who I am. Is that true? Because when we wake up without all that stuff, we panic. So, you know, all the problems in life, all the problems you have, they come from this firm, stubbornly held belief in separate selves, of yourself and everyone else. When you let go of that, it becomes a very fluid, open world. Just deal with things as they arise. Good things, bad things. There's nothing solid behind it. When we don't know that, we think there is something solid behind it and there's something here receiving it, and we get stuck. So if you put our lack of understanding and permanence with our lack of understanding that everything is empty of self, you put them together, and what do you get? Suffering, right? The other mark of existence. But again, please understand, the suffering is not, is not original or the original state of things. Remember? It is because, remember, the suffering comes from stained things, contaminated things, impure things, which means everything that is seen through delusion and ignorance and therefore is grasped at. So, when we deeply practice impermanence and truly accept it as our operating view of the world and everything in it, right? When we truly, at least conceptually, understand the non-self, non-permanent, non-solid nature of everything, right? And then in our relationship to phenomena, we stop approaching phenomena as a source of where I can find meaning and purpose and happiness and everything, you know, that I seek, right? When I stop seeing it as a source of happiness, but I realize that all my grasping, all my attaching come from ignorance and will only lead to suffering, dissatisfaction, anger, fear, sadness, despair, envy, jealousy, you know. All that comes simply, you know, that we grasp and attach at phenomena because we do not have a clear understanding based on non-self and impermanence. So, the causes of believing that all things are permanent, believing that all things are solid and possess a permanent enduring self, and the belief that by grasping at the things of the world, I will find happiness. You add them all up, you know what you get. In Buddhism, you get what's called samsara. Okay? Which is just the world of endlessly moving through this up and down, happy, sad, endlessly, it's a wheel, endlessly revolving. And it's a wheel, there's no way out of it. It just keeps repeating itself, right? It's like, you know, one day, you know, you're sent to minimum security prison. You're there a while, you know, that's pretty good. Uh-oh, screw up, all of a sudden you find yourself in maximum. A little bit of hell for a few days, right? Get your conduct together. Sent to medium security, this isn't too bad. Right? You see, compared to maximum security, medium security seems what? A lot better. Right? And then if you really can't act your get together, you go what? No, you don't. You go to minimum security. Which if you've been in maximum and medium, you think minimum security is heaven. And you meet a higher caliber of criminals there. You know, so it's, even the company's better. But in none of those situations, they may have different characteristics. They're all the same in the sense that nobody in there is free. Everybody in there is bound. They cannot come and go freely. So that is the nature of samsara. Even when we make it into minimum security life, because of our fundamental misunderstanding of the nature of reality, we will continue to, you know, be subject to all the things we've talked about over these days. Now, if one sees all phenomena, all composite phenomena, as intrinsically impermanent, and treat it as such, if we understand that all phenomena is absent of self, absent of solidity, simply a coming together of causes and conditions in a temporary state and is in process. Right? And if we live in this world without grasping, without averting, right, with just kind of accepting it as it is and always coming from a wholesome, positive, intelligent, wise, awakened place, right? You know what that's called? Nirvana. So, in the Zen, in our tradition, we say samsara and nirvana are the same. So as long as you think nirvana is some altered state like heaven, or it's a geographical place that eventually we'll get to, and everything will be wonderful, right? And I think some people think that that's what's going to happen because they have these, you know, old beliefs about heaven. Nirvana means the cessation of suffering. And why is there a cessation of suffering? Because you have removed all the causes of suffering. When you remove the causes of suffering, suffering ceases. Right? Nirvana, I think they often say nirvana sort of means like the fire has gone out. The fuel that burns the fire is no more. It's all burnt up. So, again, in my own training over the years, primarily in the Mahayana, I really heard a new teacher talk about nirvana. It's interesting. I think that's probably talked about more in the Theravada tradition. But there was a lot of talk about enlightenment, liberation, freedom, awakening, which mean, you know, imply the same thing. But there's a different connotation because one is awakening in the world as it is. You're awakening in your current condition. You are liberating yourself in your current condition. What are you liberating yourself from? You're liberating from all the kleshas, all the emotional afflictions, all those afflictive mind states. To be liberated means you're free of them. And then enlightenment usually has a different connotation. It's sort of the other part, which is the enlightenment, and these are just semantics. Enlightenment means all the wrong views. Right? All the wrong views are gone. So the emotional and the afflictive states, which we feel, and the wrong perceptions, deluded notions, they're all gone. And not only is the body-mind free of all unwholesome states and only knows wholesome states, but the mind no longer, sees incorrectly. It sees clearly. It sees, in Buddhism, we call waking up, seeing things as they really are. Seeing clearly. Seeing the true nature of phenomena. Seeing the true nature of the mind. Knowing who and what I really am. These are all just different ways of saying the same thing. Again, the Buddha was called the awakened one. He was no longer asleep. He was no longer sleepwalking through life. There's really not much to say. Right? Again, the main thing is, you'll walk out of here today and this will just become another impermanent experience that will disappear. Okay? There is only one way that it could possibly have a positive effect in your life. Okay? That's the only way. You can go out of here and people can say, well, what'd you do for 4 days? Well, tell them what you did. That won't help you. Only this will help us. Practice. The more we practice, the better we get. Just simple. The less we practice, there's going up and there's going down. So, I don't want to go there, but it's interesting. Many of us think we've been practicing for years, I'm really behind my afflictive states, but bingo, you let go of the Dharma. And you let other things influence you, and you'll see how quickly, how deeply held our delusions, our habits are. Right? We cannot rest, especially when we know, we have a unique opportunity in this life, those of us who are sitting here. We're not the only ones, but we have a unique opportunity. We're here, we're healthy, we have the time and the leisure to come and spend 4 days doing this. That we're interested in this. Right? If you went around and told everybody you knew, called all your friends and your family members a week ago and said, gee, there are a couple of openings for this, 4-day retreat on the mind seals of four mind seals of Dharma. Why don't you come? What do you think the response would be? What are you talking about? But if you said, there's a new Mexican restaurant in town, See, and I don't say that negatively, but that's just where people are at. That's what they're consumed with. We have to accept that, but we also often know that we have those formations deep within ourselves. So we have to be very mindful of the seeds that we water within ourselves and in others. And in others. We want to help others. Sometimes we think we're helpful, but we may not be that helpful. We may be watering negative things within them, thinking that we're helpful. Right? So we have to be. There's wisdom even in compassion. I wanted to share, and then I'll take questions about procedure. So this is Pacho Rinpoche. Again, Pacho Rinpoche was a great teacher in Tibet, 19th century. These are his words up here. One of his most famous texts is called "Words of My Perfect Teacher." Many of you have been around. We've studied this over the years. It's sort of a basic introduction, preliminary to the basic foundation practices of Buddhism. And this is at the end, conclusion. So this is at the end of this very meaningful exposition. He says, "In writing down these instructions, I have not been guided primarily by aesthetic or literary considerations. My main aim has been to faithfully record the oral instructions of my revered teacher in a way that is easy to understand and useful for the mind. I have done my best not to spoil them by mixing my own words or ideas." Again, this text is called "Words of My Perfect Teacher." It tells you what he thought about his teacher. "On separate occasions, my teacher also used to give numerous special instructions for exposing hidden faults, and I have added whatever I've been able to remember of these in various appropriate places." This is in the text. "Do not take them as a window through which to observe others' faults, but rather as a mirror for examining your own. Look carefully within yourself to see whether or not you have those hidden faults. If you do, recognize them and take them out of their hiding place. Correct your mind and set it on the right path." Is it clear? This is why when people come to me and they're in a bad mind state or a foul mind state, angry mind state, scared mind state, sad mind state, agitated mind state, upset about this and upset about that, my response is always good. Why? Because something that was hidden is out. Good. Do you understand that you have anger in you? That you have hurt in you, that you have despair in you? These are all arising from your mind. Look, they're no longer hidden. Right? Do you see, strong self-centeredness, strong sense of rightness, strong sense of all those things, good. It's out. It's no longer hidden. But he says, if you do, recognize them, take them out of their hiding place, and then correct your mind and set it on the right path. See, if we don't do that, then it's a waste. Right? In our tradition, everything is on the path. There's nothing that's off the path. This is not a nice, nice path. This is not a goody-goody path. This is not a path of heart and flowers. Right? That's probably a different building on Nebraska. This is the path you know, we're of total openness. And especially you want to see hidden faults. What are they hidden for? What does that mean? Hidden from who? Hidden from yourself. You may be surprised to see that many other people see them in you. Right? And if there's one thing that we don't like somebody else to point out is what? Anybody notice? What? Or, oh, because we don't see them as faults, do we? Mm-mm-mm. Notice that. You know, in this tradition, if somebody points out your faults, you know what you do? You say, thank you. I'm serious. You say, thank you. Wow. I miss that. Thank you for pointing it out to me. Because I want to wake up. I want to be free. I want to be a wholesome human being. You know, if that's your intention, you want your faults pointed out. But he's talking about, you know, the ones that we pretend aren't there. We keep them hidden. Right? There are a lot of us who keep things hidden. Some of us even have dark things within our psyche that we keep really hidden because we don't even want to acknowledge them to ourselves that they exist. Then they come out. We're not happy. Stuff it right back down. That's not our way. That is only a way for the continuation of suffering. Okay? So, if you're a serious practitioner, you want to be free. What do you want to be free from? From all the afflictions and the wrong views that exist within your own mind. Is that true? So this teaching on hidden faults is very important. So he says, you know, take these teachings, et cetera, as a window to observe others' faults. I mean, that we're excellent at. But rather as a mirror for examining your own faults. See, it takes training, a willingness, right? Because we are so focused on the faults of others, right? So many people say, I could do something about my critical mind, my judgmental mind. I'm just going around the world criticizing, judging everybody I run into, every situation, right? You see, where does that get us? Where does that get us? Be honest, where does it get you? Yeah, it feels good. Makes you just feel, it just builds up your ego. Ego. You know? I live in a world of jerks, idiots, incompetence, right? Not me, though. You see, all that stuff is just egocentric. It's just building up self. But are we willing to turn that same persistent a willingness to pay attention to the faults of my own? When am I acting in a place that's contaminated by self? When am I holding on to my views? When am I not listening to hear the views of others? I mean, do I need to go on and on? I mean, this is, you know. So we need to find these hidden places within ourselves and take them out of their hiding place. And he says, correct your mind and set your mind on the right path. That's all you do. This is not time for thinking about it, analyzing, go back into your childhood, right? It's out. It's no longer hidden. Correct it and set your mind on the right path. And that's what we have the Dharma, the teachings for, to help us do that. And then he quotes Atisha, Noble Atisha. He says, the best, my throat's a little raspy today. Let me just drink some tea. Oh, should never drop a book. So Atisha said, the noble Atisha, the best spiritual friend is one who attacks your hidden faults. What? Many people, we love our Sangha brothers and sisters, don't we? They're so kind, they're so supportive, they're always complimenting me, giving me attaboys and attagirls, and isn't that right? And we just love it, don't we? Oh yeah, I got the best spiritual friends. Atisha said, the best. Again, doesn't mean we can't have spiritual friends. He's just saying the best spiritual friend is the one who attacks your hidden faults. How many people would like their, everyone goes, that's a friend? Yeah, this is another way. See, it's, you see, it's interesting, isn't it? It's another level of seriousness about spiritual practice and your own development, right? You see? Because if I really want to be free, and I realize I'm not free as long as I am nurturing within myself, even in a hidden basis, afflictive mind states, afflictive emotions, as long as I'm continuing to act in unwholesome, unskillful way, causing suffering to myself and others, right? If I am doing that, and I don't see it clearly, therefore, wouldn't I want somebody to point it out to me? Or not? What do you think, Evelyn? No. You see, there we are. There's our ego, you see, and I know so many people, that's the way it is, right? You know? I once years ago did Beginning Anew with somebody. It was a rite. Everybody know the Beginning Anew ceremony, you know, in the beginning you'd say positive things. In the beginning you share your own shortcomings. And in the third part you express any, right? And in this thing, I was doing it, really was going wonderful. I got to the third part. The person got furious at me when I brought something up. There was a, you're not allowed to bring that up. Right? You know what I mean? You see? Like, I thought this is the time to do that. You see? We have agendas, don't we? You see, you have agendas. Well, you know, they may not do it skillfully. They may not be masters of skillful communication. Right? But you should still be grateful. I mean, communication should be robust. You know, if somebody kind of really whacks you, right? You can go, well, I hear you. Could we just kind of massage that a little bit? You know what I mean? I mean, you don't have to give up, you see. You don't have to get angry or hurt. You can go, whew, that was very direct, you see? And you can play with it a bit. It's not the end. But you can see if Evelyn only has, like what you said, you know, I'm willing to take the message, but only if it's delivered in one of those pretty little envelopes, you know, about a little flowers on it. You know what I mean? And at least they say, Evelyn, I love you and you're a wonderful person. You see, that you, you know? Then, Yeah. But can you see it? It's like it's just self. It's just self endlessly wanting, you know, that I'm wonderful, that I'm loved. And I just have a little hidden fault, you know? You know? I mean, the truth is, my friends, we are monsters of egocentricity. We are just ravenous monsters of delusion. Just consuming it morning, noon, and night. Isn't that true? to one degree or another. You know, we need help. We need all the help we can get. And we would hope our dearest friends would help us on our way. I say to people, you know, I'm the teacher, I understand that, but if you see me acting unskillfully, not the way a teacher should, incongruent with what I'm saying, point it out to me. Help me. I may be blind to myself. Help me. I mean, I say that with full seriousness. It doesn't. Not attached to anything. We just want to wake up and be free. The best spiritual friend is the one who attacks your hidden faults. The best instructions are the ones that hit those faults. Okay? So we want teachings and instructions that help us, that point us directly at those hidden faults and give us instructions on how to remedy them. Right? So we should be going to our teacher, not trying to look good, but going, you know, wow, you know, I get these dark seeds in me that come out. Can you give me some medicine for them? Right? I have the seeds of fear and worry and anxiety and anger, self-righteousness and stubbornness and, and, you know, obsession and, you know, neurotic rumination, you know, all this kind of stuff people do back and forth, back and forth. You know, help me. Give me an instruction. Give me a teaching. I mean, wouldn't that be sane? Right, Maggie? Maggie used to be a ball player. Right? I mean, did you want your coach to go, oh, everything you did, Maggie, that was really wonderful. Yeah, that was great. See, just, you know, I mean, even though you keep striking out, but your swing, you know what I mean? You really got a nice swing there, right? I mean, is that what you would really want to hear if you really want to develop? What would you want to hear from your coach? What? Yeah. And he or she would be doing that because they want to help you, right? You see what a disservice that coach would have done for you if they were just very nice to you, know, like Evelyn wants, right? You know, you can do no wrong, you know. The best spiritual friend is the one who attacks your hidden faults. The best instructions are the ones that hit those faults. The best friends are mindfulness and vigilance. Okay? So those are truly our best friends. But it's got to be very open. The light has to be on. Right? Mindfulness means there's full awareness of what's going on within us and around us. And vigilance means is that quality, you know, of consistency. We're always watching. You know, we don't have to be in the meditational. We're just going about our life, going about our day, our relationships, our work. You know, it doesn't matter where we are, but we are mindful and vigilant. We kind of, you know, we're aware of what's going on within us. And we know the wholesome from the unwholesome. The positive from the negative. Is that clear? So those are our best friends. The best incentives, listen to this one. The best incentives are enemies, obstacles, and the sufferings of illness. I mean, it's... What? Yeah, but to consciously see that, you see, it's the same thing, you know. Enemies are the ones that give us a hard time, that don't do what we want, that are doing what we don't want. Obstacles are things that are getting in my way. Illness is something I don't want to have to deal with, right? So, these are the best incentives. When he says the best incentives, he means the best incentives to wake up, to be free, to see clearly the impermanent, empty, non-self nature of reality. Right? Because those experiences wake us up. I mean, there's nothing about good friends and good times, and, you know? But the problem with them, they don't wake us up. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, that's a good part of life. But as you all know, it's unfortunately, it's adversity. It's difficulty when the hidden stuff comes out. But again, this, I mean, I share these words. Atisha was a great, great being. And I share these words because perhaps some of you in here want to hear them and want to practice in this way. This is only for people who want to wake up and be free. If you don't want to wake up and be free, you don't, you know, you can forget these teachings. The best incentives are enemies, obstacles, and sufferings of illness. And the final line is, the best method is not to fabricate anything. Things arise, just deal with it. Be mindful, be vigilant, apply the antidote, you know. But endlessly we fabricate. It's like some people, no matter what you say to them, they always have a reply. Right? They always have a rationalization. We're always fabricating. But see, this is a very simple way to practice. It just acknowledges. You see, it's like when we talked about earlier. I said, yeah, all, you know, as you read the news, as you just go through life, you know, everything has a different story and context, but basically everything has the stamp of impermanence. That's all, just impermanence, impermanence. That's all it is. You know, just suffering, just, you know, yeah. Watch it. We watch the seeking for pleasure. We watch as it dissipates. We watch the need for another pleasure. And we name it. We name it because we are mindful and we are vigilant. It is extreme. Now he's talking himself. It is extremely important to bring the instructions to bear on your hidden faults, to use the Dharma to correct your mind, to maintain mindfulness and vigilance all the time, not to blame anybody else for what happens, never to let a single negative thought. Wow. Who are these guys? I mean, you know, and from everything we know about Pacha Rinpoche, he lived this. He was an impeccable human being. He was, you know, he could have been a great teacher in a monastery. He was an incarnate lama. Instead, he left it all behind and he just went to his teacher that he called his perfect teacher, lived out in the wilds. You know, you wanted to go study with him, you had to kind of like dig a hole in the ground and kind of cover it with whatever, you know, your sheepskin or something. I mean, it was, you know, and this was his teacher, and he got the most, you know, incredible teachings from him. And then he lived this way. I mean, he could have been famous, he could have, but he just wandered about teaching, right? And people, you know, people very common in Tibet, you know, people great respect for the Dharma, Dharma teachers, people would give him gold and silver, and he'd just give it to the next person, who, you know, give it away to the poor. I mean, he never kept anything, never built a monastery, never did anything. Actually, I visited the cave when I was in Tibet where he wrote this. I mean, it's a cave. And if you read this, it's just filled with all kinds of Dharma references, you know, you think, you know, he must have had a complete library or something, you know. I mean, it was just a little cave under a rock where he wrote Words of My Perfect Teacher. I mean, these were great beings. So it's extremely important to bring the instruction to bear on your hidden faults. Use the Dharma to correct your mind, to maintain mindfulness and vigilant all the time, not to blame anybody else for what happens, never to let a single thought run loose, and to use the teachings to tame your mind. If you can do all that, you will be doing yourself a favor. The Dharma will be of benefit to your mind, and following a teacher will begin to have real meaning. And he quotes a teacher again who says the best way you can help others is to lead them to take up the Dharma. The best way they can receive that help is to turn their mind to Dharma. So again, Dharma doesn't necessarily always mean Buddhism. It means you want to get them to take up a path that leads them out of their suffering. That's the best way to help somebody. In short, you now have the freedoms and advantages of human existence. You have met an authentic teacher and received the profound instructions. Now you have the opportunity to attain Buddhahood, Nirvana, by putting these instructions and teachings into practice. You can now establish a strategy for all your future lives, or alternatively, abandon yourself to chance. It is now that you can turn your mind to the wholesome or abandon it to the unwholesome. This very moment is the watershed between the right and the wrong direction of your entire existence. This opportunity is like finding something to eat when you only have had one meal in 100 throughout your whole life. So make use of the Dharma to free yourself while you can, taking death as your spur at all times. Cut short all your endless making of plans for this life and diligently try to practice what is good and give up what is unwholesome. Follow an authentic teacher and accept whatever he or she tells without hesitation. Give yourself to the practice in body and mind. So there we are. Words of my perfect teacher, Tsongpa Rinpoche. So we're coming to the end. So we'll have our closing circle. Any questions? Anything not clear about the four seals and most importantly their practice? And again, they're always. Practice has to lead to some kind of realization. They're all different depths, but realization means you've taken them in so they become real. You know, like we said earlier, when you've practiced, impermanence, it's like as you go through your day, you just have this sense of the impermanence of everything. And so as you respond to the endless changes in your life, it's not with this holding on or holding back, but it's just this understanding. It feels more spacious and open. Is that clear? When you understand the three types of suffering that come from grasping and ignorance, you're not running there anymore. You know, you're not going to the world of change and the world of temporariness and transitoriness, and that is totally controlled by endless variables so far beyond your control. If you want a continuous state of happiness and well-being and stability, it's like that's nirvana. That's another path, you see. That's the Dharma path. If we we put as much energy into the Dharma that we put into our worldly life, we would have all attained full enlightenment already in this life. But we're too preoccupied. Yeah, and non-self, you know. It is often said, like in the analogy I said yesterday, you know, to do the exercises and to see that there's nothing there, like many of you saw when you look into your mind and body, that's really still a kind of a conceptual understanding. You want to do it enough and enough that you always get it. You know, the analogy is with the snake in the room. You know, you could see the poisonous snake go in your room, right? And then you look around and you, at the end of it, you go, oh, it's not there, you see? And you relax. But that night when you go to sleep, because you couldn't find it, there may be this kind of nagging, right? Whether it's still there. You know, you're not 100% convinced that it still may not be lurking, okay? So we want to get to our understanding of non-self that it also becomes, you know, you're, you know, the way you are in the world. It becomes realization. You don't see things as solid. You don't see people as solid. You don't see your thoughts, feelings, perceptions as solid. You just see them as this constant arising and passing according to causes and conditions. Impermanent. And so life becomes much easier. You live life much easier. Right? There's no, you know, you're not stuck. You flow in life. And it doesn't mean everything is wonderful. You know, sometimes it's, you know, you run into all kinds of, but it's okay. It's just another moment. That's all. Another moment to cultivate understanding, insight, compassion, you know, wonderful. Right? You see how easy life can be. Yes, Alex. Yeah. So in this teaching, they don't use it. In Mahayana Vajra, yeah, we talk about emptiness, right? So, right, it's the same thing. But emptiness is anyway, yeah. So that's everything. Yeah, what is everything empty of? Of a solid self.
And there also, it's also just terminology. But when people talk about the three marks of existence,
the three marks of existence are the first three.
Right, right. They just don't have nirvana.
Right. So nirvana is added. It's, as I said, right. So the first three are the three marks of existence. The fourth is the result if you get the first three. So think of the first three as the cause. The fourth is the result. They left that out of the, somewhere along the line, somebody corrected it. Any other questions about how to continue our practice after we leave here? Now's the time. Now again, I mean, the fortunate thing, there is lots on, you know, I mean, these are very common teachings. I mean, we teach them a lot here in our community. There are books. I mean, you can study this stuff, reflections. Right, so there's no lack of opportunity. Yes.
I imagine others really appreciated the way you laid it all out so clearly. So to the extent that the notes make any sense, I'll just type those up and send those out to everybody. So if you're worried about copying things down, you don't need to do that.
The notes on every presentation?
No.
Oh.
Just the few, your main points on each one of the seals. No. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
I'm wondering about the words that are on the sign up front.
You'd
if
like,
those are
you'd
available.
Like to post them in your house.
If you, yes, I would.
Yeah,
like to.
I think I've done that. I've been using these at retreats, and I think I do have a copy of them. Angie, if you can remind me.
That would be great.
Well, I'll send it out to everybody. I mean, you could probably find it I mean, this is a, I don't know, I forget what it's called, but this is like Pastor Rinpoche's exhortation or something. But I will send it if I can find it. Anything else?